I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Hello and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH at 96.5 TIC. Our guest is former Hartford Mayor Luke Bronin, who is running, looking to unseat incumbent Democratic Congressman John Larson in Connecticut's 1st Congressional District. We're doing an update with him for the first time in a little while on the show, and looking forward to hearing what's up with his campaign and the race up to the primary in August. Luke, welcome to the show again. Good to have you on.
Thanks, Morgan. Good to be with you.
Let's go back to May 11th. It was a Monday. It was the Democratic convention for the congressional seats in Connecticut, and there was a bit of an upset in the 1st District, which is where you're running for Congress. Could you just kind of take us back to that moment and kind of bring us up to speed at the start of our show and our conversation? What went down that particular night?
Well, I mean, the convention is where delegates from Democratic parties of each of the 27 cities and towns around the district come together and endorse a candidate for Congress. And as you know, I won the endorsement that night. It's the first time, as far as we know, it's the first time in Connecticut history that a challenger has beat an incumbent at a convention. And I think it was a reflection of the broader sentiment out there, which is, you know, we all, myself included, have an enormous amount of respect for John Larson, but there's a real hunger for getting some new energy down in Washington.
And we're now in a three-way primary for the Democratic side. That would be you, as you mentioned, John Larson, who qualified with enough delegates, and also Jillian Gilchrist. And we'll break this down more in our conversation. You know, I remember seeing that particular night, you know, John Larson looked pretty defeated, a little surprised. He definitely spoke with a defiant tone. But, you know, how do you characterize the sentiment in the room at that point in time? I mean, what was everybody feeling? It was a tense night.
Look, you know, that night I described it as a political earthquake in that convention hall. And I think that it did feel like that a little bit. You know, I was not surprised by the outcome, because conventions are not won and lost the night of the convention. Conventions are won and lost in the months and sometimes even years leading up to it. It's in the, you know, the conversations with Democrats across the district, the discussions with Democratic town committees, and I had a pretty good sense of, you know, what the sentiment, what the support was coming into that room that night. And look, the most important thing now is the convention is one step along the way, but the most important day is August 11th, which is the primary, when, you know, tens of thousands of Democrats are going to come out and make their voices heard. And what we're seeing out there is kind of what we saw in the convention, which is that when Democrats realize that for the first time in almost 30 years, they actually have a choice about who they're going to send down to Washington instead of it just being a coronation, that they're choosing change, that they're choosing, you know, to say, hey, it's just, we, again, with all respect to John, it's just time to pass the torch.
I'm trying to get an idea of the differences of all three of these Democratic campaigns at this point in time. I recently spoke with Jillian Gilchrist. She said that her campaign is one of urgency. John Larson has been largely defending his track record since the 1990s. Where do you stand? What is different about your campaign?
Look, I think our country is in crisis right now. We got a president who is out of control. We got an economy that increasingly feels broken. And as a Democratic Party, we just have to bring a whole different kind of energy to this fight right now. And that's fundamentally what this is about. You know, we need it just healthy and important to get new perspectives, new energy, new voices down there. We know things are broken in Washington, and if we just keep doing the same thing, we're going to keep getting the same result.
What are some of your top line issues at this point in time?
We have a healthcare system that is completely broken, where even if you've got a good healthcare plan, you know, your costs are going through the roof and it's harder than ever to actually get the care that you need. We've got a housing market that is broken. And whether you're a kid coming out of school or whether you're a senior that wants to downsize, it's almost impossible to find a place that you can afford. We've got an electric grid that is old and expensive, and our costs are going through the roof, and we need as a country to commit to a real transformation to renewable energy, both to bring costs down and for the sake of the planet for our kids. So healthcare, housing, electricity. We also have a tax code that is completely unfair and riddled with loopholes that let people who make the most pay the least. And as a Democratic Party, we have to be clearer and bolder on all of those fronts. We can't just ride the backlash to Trump this time and think that that's going to be enough. That might be enough to let us win the House back, but it's not going to be enough to help us change the game. And what we need to be about right now is changing the game.
As far as changing the game, I know that you have been out a lot in the district recently and meeting with voters. More recently, you had obviously met with a lot of delegates and won over their support. Now it's on the voters, as you mentioned, ahead of the August 11th primary. That's your next big target and focus. As you go about your district, one of the things I said to Jillian Gilchrist is that Hartford is not Granby and Manchester is different from, say, Windsor. Okay, so all of these little different cities and towns, they're all different, and they make up District 1, the first congressional district. So what's your approach as you go and find commonalities and differences? What's your approach to talking with the voters in each one of these areas?
Okay, I mean, first of all, one of the things I love about this district is just how many, different great communities we have of all kinds, as you said. And we've got some of the most beautiful small towns in this district, and we've got the city of Hartford, and we've got, suburbs in between. I think it's a really representative district, and I love this district. What I hear out there is that people are focused on pretty much the same thing almost no matter where they are. Again, healthcare is something that we are all feeling as a pain point, both for cost and, ability to navigate a system that's more and more complicated. Housing is something I hear almost everywhere I go. I was at a senior center yesterday, and the number one issue that I was hearing about there was actually housing and the cost of housing. Again, we're all feeling electricity costs go through the roof. So regardless of what town you're in this district, the issues are pretty much the same. And similarly, wherever you go, there's just real anger and fear about what Donald Trump is doing to our country, about the reckless war that he has led us into, about the attacks on rule of law and constitutional rights and empowering ICE to violate those rights in extraordinary ways. The fact that every single thing he's done, from the blanket immigration crackdown to tariffs to the war, has driven people's costs through the roof. There's real anger and fear about that. And I hear that everywhere, in every type of community.
Our guest this week on Face Connecticut is Luke Bronin, the former Hartford mayor who is running for Connecticut's first congressional district. The focus now is to update everybody on where the campaigns stand before the August 11th primary. You know, Luke, I've seen more recently a few more digs, a few more attacks on the incumbent, John Larson. I saw you on television the other day, and, I heard the remark about, his arguing in an empty chamber and changes that are needed in Congress. But at the same time, you've worked with him closely when you were mayor of Hartford. How are you balancing this?
Well, I've said from the start, I think I've said it three times today. I really do have a lot of respect for John, and I was proud to work with him during my time as mayor, and I appreciate the work that we did together. I also think the world has changed and is changing awfully fast. Donald Trump got elected again, he beat us, despite the fact that he is a con man and a criminal and just a profoundly irresponsible leader. And yet he beat us. And so as a Democratic Party, we better be willing to look ourselves in the mirror and say, we need to make some changes. In addition, the world is changing faster than ever. You just take one issue like artificial intelligence. that is going to turn our economy upside down. And we are so slow in reacting to it and making sure that we've got safety measures in place and responsible regulation. I don't think these are questions that John Larson's even thinking about. So I don't have to, be disrespectful. I don't have to say that John's a bad man. John's a good man. I appreciate the work he's done. But the world has changed, and it's changing faster by the day. The only thing that's changing slower than ever is who's representing us in Washington. And if we're not willing to make those changes, then we're going to continue to see the results we've got.
Let's shift over to funding. This has been a topic that I'm hearing about almost every day now in the first congressional race, perhaps more so than I've heard in recent years about elections involving Connecticut. Why is this such a big topic, Luke?
I don't know.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, I think John Larson is, I think two things. Look, you see this as something that Donald Trump does. When he's got a weakness, he tries to attack people on that same thing. And I think one of John's weaknesses is that he has historically taken millions of dollars in corporate PAC money. His campaigns have been largely fueled by corporate PAC contributions. And I think that's a problem. It's a problem because it's just part of the whole system that makes it so easy for members of Congress to just be there, to be complacent, to be cautious, and to just be there over and over, because when you're an incumbent who's been there for decades, you just hang the open sign on your door for your campaign and all this corporate money comes rolling in. And that's something I've pointed out. I think John recognizes that's a weakness, so he's trying to attack me. But the reality is, look, everything that I said from day one of this campaign, I'm not accepting a single dollar of corporate PAC contributions, not just in this campaign, but in any campaign going forward. So I think that John recognizes that that's a weakness for him.
He put out a statement just yesterday. It says, a flurry of recent reporting exposing Luke Bronin's connections to corporate donors with ties to Republicans, Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, and the businesses building AI data centers has raised new questions for the corporate lawyer from Greenwich who was literally on their payroll. And then he goes on and with some specific questions. But, I mean, how do you respond to that, that tough paragraph from your opponent?
It's absurd, and John knows it. And I think what's happening, again, is that John's looking at the numbers, he's looking at the convention, and he's getting a little bit desperate. It's disappointing to see him, go so negative. What he's attacking me for is, one, working with one of the most progressive policy organizations in the state of Connecticut. It's called the Connecticut Project, which I did some work for, over the 2 years after I was mayor. I'm really proud of that work. I mean, this is an organization that has advocated for expanded housing opportunity and affordable housing, for tenants' rights, for expanding SNAP benefits, for making it easier for people to access the benefits they're entitled to, loosening the restrictions that have kept Connecticut from making investments in things like education and childcare. I'm really proud of what they stand for and proud of the work. And on the flip side, again, if you look at John's campaign finance filings, it's just full of corporate PAC contributions. And one of his biggest donors is also, a bunch of executives at a private equity firm that are one of the biggest owners of data centers in the country. So it's just kind of silly. But I guess that's what you expect, when races like this tighten up.
And then he goes on to talk about how there's a dark money movement trying to replace progressives with corporate Democrats. So again, much of the same in your eyes?
Yeah, I think it's just it is nonsense, and it is sad to see a 28-year congressman, taking that approach. Again, I've tried to be respectful all the way through this campaign, but I think what people are feeling out there, and I'm sure that John is now feeling it too, is that there is a real, real hunger for change, and I think that is probably why he's just getting a little bit more nasty.
My guest this week on Face Connecticut is Luke Bronin, former Hartford mayor, who is running for Connecticut's first congressional district, looking to unseat incumbent John Larson, as we've been talking about the last 15 or so minutes. You know, Luke, there seems to be a wave across the country where there are many challenges taking place against long-term, long-running candidates in established seats across the country. Are you in contact with any of these other candidates? Is there like a coalition of Democrats and progressives that are trying to shake things up in the party, or are you going this all on your own, just focusing on Connecticut?
Yeah, I'm not really in touch with any other candidates. I'm focused on the 27 towns in this district and getting out there every single day and talking to voters in this district. You know, I also think that this race is a little bit different from a lot of the races that you see around the country where somebody's challenging somebody who's been there for a long, long time. You know, I am running this race because I think we need to shake things up. I think we need to bring a lot of new energy. I think we need to put some pressure from below on a Democratic Party to be a lot bolder and a lot clearer about what we're fighting for. But I'm also coming to this as somebody who brings a lot of experience. You know, I mean, I've served in federal government in the Obama administration. I've led our capital city through some of its most challenging times, from, you know, when I came in inheriting a city that was bankrupt, getting it stable, leading through the pandemic. You know, I've served our country in uniform, including in Afghanistan. And so this is not just somebody running on the basis of, you know, new versus old. I also think I'm bringing some experience and perspectives that would be really valuable down in Washington. You know, I think we could use having a few more veterans in Congress. I think we could use having a few more mayors in Congress, you know, mayors who are usually being judged on what you get done, not on what you talk about.
Let's talk about some of the issues specifically. I know that you ran through a list of some of the top line issues earlier in our conversation, healthcare, housing, the electric grid, and high electric costs being some of the top three things that you mentioned. But I'm curious what some of your ideas are on addressing these particulars. Let's talk about the electric grid. Just throw that out there for one.
Sure.
What is our problem with electricity? Connecticut has some of the highest electric costs in the country. Earlier this year, just in April, it was announced that Connecticut residents will see on average upwards $34 off of their monthly bills. And then now all of a sudden there's a request from Eversource. They want 11%. I know that that's more of a statewide issue, but what are some things that could happen at the federal level to improve the fact that Connecticut residents are paying, frankly, too much for electricity?
What we need at the federal level is a massive, long overdue commitment to overhauling our electric grid and transitioning to renewable energy of all kinds. You know, solar, wind, hydro. We need to put a lot more investment in battery storage and in developing technology on green tech, and also small scale nuclear. You know, we have to be pushing way harder. And I think it's embarrassing, you know, for us as a country to say this, but the truth is, China is doing this. China's been doing this, and they're outpacing us. They've now created a real green energy, you know, industry that's even exporting green tech around the world. And we're sitting here doubling down on oil and gas. And you know what doesn't get stuck in the Strait of Hormuz is, you know, sun and wind. We have to make a real national commitment to this. And that includes, you know, a national commitment to upgrading our electric infrastructure so you can actually move electricity and store electricity. You know, if it's being captured in massive solar fields in Texas, we should be able to move that farther and more efficiently. This is something that that's going to take a real federal commitment. And I think it's the only thing that's going to actually change the game in terms of costs here in Connecticut. And that's why we need somebody in Congress who is fighting hard on this issue.
What are some ways that you've thought up to change the situation with housing? Either it's too unaffordable, you've got people paying more than the asking price of a home, not the same or less. You've got rents that are through the roof. And this isn't just an issue for the first congressional district. This is Connecticut-wide. This is countrywide. What are some of the thoughts that you have to attack the housing problem in the country and in your district?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on this. I mean, as you know, Morgan, I spent a lot of time, you know, getting housing built in Hartford. We got thousands of units built. It was a big priority here. And so it's a priority. And I'm also really familiar with the things that make it hard to do and the obstacles. The first big thing I'd say is the federal government needs to get back in the game of helping to create housing opportunity. You know, and for anybody who thinks that that's not the job of the federal government, go back and look at the GI Bill. I mean, look at what the federal government did after World War II to create the middle class and create, you know, homeownership throughout the country. Ever since Ronald Reagan, we've gotten less and less ambitious and less, active in trying to create housing opportunity. One of the things that I think we need to do is take a whole new look at the housing finance tools that come out of the feds. You know, they tend to just do the same thing we used to do, which is focus on building kind of low cost, lower quality, affordable housing, all in concentrated in one place. We need to focus a lot more on mixed income development, where you help communities build, and you know, where there's a mix of market rate and workforce housing and affordable housing in a way that's healthier for a community. That's what we tried to do in Hartford. And we did it with tools, you know, at the state level, but at the federal level, we need the federal government back in the game. The other thing is we need to be doing a lot more on the federal side to help make sure that we're bringing down the costs of construction. Again, I mean, Trump's tariffs have pushed the other direction in a huge way. And the cost of materials has gone through the roof because of those tariffs. And so one thing we need to do is make sure that we're bringing costs down, not just by, you know, making sure we get rid of the tariffs, but also, you know, real, you know, research and innovation in the materials that we use and the way we build. You know, we kind of build things the same way we did 50 years ago, and there are not many parts of our economy where we do that.
As we get closer to August 11th, every day it gets a little bit closer. What is your strategy in the next, say, 2 months?
I mean, my strategy is to talk to as many voters as possible in every way possible. You know, and that's me getting out and knocking on doors. It's me going out and meeting in living rooms and kitchens and, you know, and breweries and gatherings all across the district and talking to people. And of course, it's getting our message out on TV and radio and in people's mailboxes and on digital and all of the things that, you know, that we can do to make sure that, you know, as I said before, that people realize that for the first time in almost 30 years, they actually have a choice. That's the main mission, is to make sure that voters know that this time they have a choice, and they haven't really had one for 28 years.
We're down to about the last moment here, Luke. If someone is listening, they're in the district, and they want to get in touch with you, talk to you about issues, or ask you questions, how can they either find you, be it in person, at events, or connect with you online? Could you tell people how they can get in touch?
Absolutely. So the best way is go to the website, which is broninforcongress.com. You know, if you want to, you can check out information there. If you have questions, you can email us there and contact us through the website. If you want to volunteer, you can sign up there. We would love to hear from you. Would love to be able to share when we're having events and where. You know, and also if anybody out there agrees that it's time for a change, then grateful for anything you can do to spread the word.
Luke, I appreciate your time on Face Connecticut, and I'm sure we'll talk before too long.
Sounds good, Morgan. Thanks a lot.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.